And welcome to AFL Tonight. I am your host, Tim Capper. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. Let me go ahead and bring in Adam here before we start the show. As we start the show,
yo Florida,
huh?
Yo from rainy Florida.
That's right.
Been rainy Canada too lately.
Oh yeah, you should have seen it. You should have seen us yesterday. We had 2¾ inches in 30 minutes.
So we're broadcasting from outside of ponds with ducks outside.
That's right. I wanted to bring in Adam, and it's a little bit solemn. I'm sure anybody who is an Arena Football League fan knows what happened yesterday, and Adam and I just wanted to quickly talk about it. First, Adam did a very – I felt it's one of – and the time that I've known Adam and seeing him write, I think it's one of the most heartfelt op-ed pieces I've seen him write. And if you haven't seen it, it is on still on the front page listed for all of our Arena Fan originals. So obviously props to you, Adam, on that one. As I told you before, it was tough. But as everybody knows, San Jose fullback Johnny Curtin passed. After being, I guess, you know, it's nice to say, Adam, I guess we could say he did pass being a hero. He was a hero for the San Jose SaberCats.
Yeah, he absolutely went out being a winner.
Yes.
You know, when you score the game-winning touchdown in one of the highest-scoring games in the history of the league, you can say you've done something.
Yeah.
But, it's another one of these moments, like, you know, when you know, we all woke up that morning and, you know, right before the Arena Bowl and heard Fran Popsadero died. When Justin Skaggs lost his battle with brain cancer, when Al Lucas died on the field, the name slips my mind. I think it was a defensive back for the old Daytona Beach.
Team.
Vince Fullwood. I don't remember what the name is. I may be totally butchering that, but the player for the Daytona Beach. Forget what their name was. Were they the Thunder?
Daytona Beach.
Thunderbirds.
Thunderbirds. Yeah.
When it was just another one of those, you know, moments where you kind of step back and you realize that, you know, regardless of whether these guys are playing for millions and millions of dollars or whether they're playing for $400 a week, it's still, you know, it's still just a game. And, you know, this obviously is something that, you know, transcends the sport in the game in its entirety.
And, you know, I think it is for, you know, for old school arena football fans, who remember, you know, these tragic, events happening. You know, you remember these things, and I think the one that stands out the most, I think, specifically because it was on field, Adam, was the one of Al Lucas, and that's why Arena Fan on the,
April every year.
Yeah, on the anniversary, I guess we could say, of his death, that's why we put the Arena Fan logo in black. And I think, in essence, yes, it is on the day that it occurred for him, but I think it is also for every player who used to play arena football who has passed during their career. So it's just a matter now of, you know, not much information has come out. Adam, you and I could speculate until the cows come home.
The only thing we should say is that no one is suspecting anything, you know,
yes,
any sort of foul play of a murder or anything like that. So, you know, as they get more details, we'll get more details, and we'll get them out there too. You know, to you, we've got Andy, you know, over there in San Jose getting the Mercury News every day. So, you know, as soon as he knows or one of us find out, we'll make sure to have it up on Arena Fan. But, you know, at this point, it's nothing more or less than a tragedy for sure.
It is. And as I said, a guy is so young, 26 years old. It's funny, I think a lot of the guys who had passed in the AFL had been around that age. None of them have been over 27,
yeah.
I think.
Skaggs was 28, Lucas was 26. Mm-hmm. Even Popsadero for a coach was only 34.
Exactly. So, and it's these things that, you know, 25 years of arena football, a lot of the things ring true, you know, ring in your heads. You need to remember, not only do you have the games, you have the arena bowls, you have all the great games, you have the championships, you have the catches, you also need to remember the players who have passed and the ones that have played, because, you know, as you put it so succinctly, it is a game, But they were a part of the game that we love. So it's, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with the Curtin family, and we hope that they can get over this tragedy very, very quickly. On a, I guess we're on a happier note, let's go ahead and switch gears here. Something we had to very, you know, you had mentioned to me, I think it was very simple. You emailed me this week and you go, Orlando's trading their entire damn team. And it's like, we verified it was the trade deadline. So.
Somebody decided the trade deadline should be on Memorial Day.
Yeah. The funny thing is though, and I don't think I've ever seen this, you know, we talk about players being traded for future considerations. It just seemed that a lot of these players that were traded to, in return for the players that Orlando got, were future considerations.
Yeah, Orlando did a lot of in the end, I'm sure that it was basically, you know, Orlando got Milwaukee's future considerations, and then they traded those future considerations to Arizona, and yada, 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 so far down the line. So, you know, who knows? And, you know, future considerations in the AFL could be a player. They could be a waiver claim.
Yep.
They could be, what else have we seen in the past? I think it was the only two we've seen in the past in this league. But who knows what else they're going to invent?
Bag of balls?
Yeah, who knows? May end up in a situation where a coach gets traded at some point.
But, you know, and I mentioned this before, and I think you had a very good answer to it, but I'll bring it up anyways, is that, you know, the problems that Orlando's having this year, you know, we saw what happened last week in Pittsburgh, and then being able to take, quote-unquote, advantage of the bye week and getting a new coaching staff. How is it odd that this team has basically gutted their team?
Well,
yet the coach has not been a part of that. You know,
yeah,
why?
Yeah, I mean they didn't horrendously blow the team up yet. I mean, look, sure, the team's been through three quarterbacks. We know that situation's been ugly all year and is going to be ugly for the rest of the year. But it's also, you know, two of the three wide receivers are the same. You know, they did trade Nate Force this week, who really kind of has, you know, fallen off the face of the earth a little bit. He goes back to Milwaukee, where he really became a name in this league. So
it,
I think that's
going
to be a good fit for them. They also lost Victor Williams this week to injury in the game against Tampa Bay. I don't know whether, you know, what his status. I can just tell you he left that game because I was there. One of the, unfortunately, many injuries in that game, I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute. So it's a good fit for Milwaukee. What Orlando is going to do with a third wide receiver spot, who knows? I have no idea.
Well, and that brings us to which will be our next segment, obviously, is that, you know, why trade, after what occurred this past week, why did they trade Nate Force?
Well, it really is anybody's guess. You know, but, you know, back on Coach Muncy, it's very clear. This team, it's kind of like when San Jose lost last year, that last game of the year, and they didn't get in the playoffs and all that. You know, I'm sorry, what if they lost that game to Spokane?
Mm-hmm.
They were determined that the Shock were going to get in the playoffs and the Sabercats were. You knew that team was going to come back with a ton of different players. And it did. And it came back with a lot of the veterans. You know, a lot of the guys that have been around in the past came back with guys like Hank Edwards and came back with Tim McGill and all these other guys. And we look at the Sabercats and go, wow, they're stacked. Well, it's not a shock that they're that good of a team now. You're going to see the same thing in Orlando this next year. All those quarterbacks are going to be gone. Most of the receivers are going to be gone. The entire offensive line should just be gutted and totally started over because that unit's atrocious. And there'll be very few pieces of that defense that are kept together, even though the defense has done a great job. So that being said, it's going to kind of be, if they didn't fire Coach Muncy just before the bye week, and if they didn't fire Coach Muncy the game after that, which would now be two games ago when they blew yet another one of these tremendous leads, you know, if they didn't do it after either of those spots, they're not going to do it for the rest of the year. I mean, unless things just are completely beyond repair.
Right, and I was trying to think, and there's one thing I wanted to bring up last week, and I was not able to verify the information before we started the show tonight. You know, with the firing of Coach Siegfried last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, who was the last head coach to be fired during the season?
That would be Derek Stingley.
Yes, you're right.
Who, ironically, is now
their head coach, their interim head coach.
So, it's a nice little.
It happened. It's happened.
It's a nice little thing to laugh at.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened. It's ironic, I guess. you know, and you know, seeing the
another situation in Pittsburgh, you know, that's going to get blown up at the end of the year and just start it over.
It's true, but you know, I saw some of the information that came from there from Coach Stingley's first press conference. It's funny saying Mike Tomczak is a sieve when it's coming to the Arena Football League. Well, of course he's a sieve. He's like, of course he's going to be his mind's going to be a sponge. He doesn't know crap about the game. So what do you expect? So the question is, who is going to be calling the plays, the offensive plays this week? But anyways.
Well, Stingley's a defensive guy.
I know.
So, you know, who cares?
Yeah.
Pittsburgh should just play Orlando every week from here on out.
Oh, God.
That would just give us one game we could just fucking toss – sorry. We should just toss aside and let that be the end of it.
There are so many games that poor Orlando can blow this year. You know, I don't want to see another one thing like that. I mean,
hey, you know what? It was another game this week where they were up 11 points early, and it fell apart.
And it's, you know, they keep getting razzed on television, live TV. They keep getting razzed on.
Deservedly so.
You know, Coach Moss this week during halftime said, what was some of the effect that we don't give up at this point. I'm like, oh, wow.
You know, they deserve it. The Predators are still being outscored by almost 22 points per game in the second half.
I know.
I mean, they've now been outscored in the third quarter of that game. In the second quarter of that game, they were outscored by, I think it was 23 points. Mm-hmm. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it was by a whole ton of points they were outscored by in that second quarter. And it was the ninth time this year that they've been outscored by at least 13 points
in
a quarter.
Yeah, I think they outscored 30-7.
So, I went back and looked it up. The winless Carolina Cobras, mm-hmm. you know, the 0-16 Carolina Cobras, yeah. only had 13 times that they were beaten by 13 or more in a quarter. Predators are going to crush that. The Predators are absolutely going to crush that. And in the third quarter of this year, they've not scored more than 7 points once.
That's bad. But, well, you know what? We'll bring up Orlando again once we go over this week's schedule. Actually, we're still talking about Orlando, but we're talking about Nate Force being traded and whatnot, and it's true they now only have two wide receivers because bombshell brought forth by Adam this week. How can we put it?
The only team Mr. Scipio is going to be playing for is the one at the Osceola County Penitentiary.
Bobby Scipio and I guess do I dare to say his accomplice or his friend or his colleague or whatever the hell you want to call him?
Some other idiot.
Yeah, he was arrested.
Just use the term allegedly.
Yeah, he was arrested for attempted murder. And I mentioned to you this before, is that I was surprised that all the information that is readily available by different departments of correction online.
Yep.
I was all there. Lord.
I got the mugshot on Arena Fan.
I know. It's death. Now, what...
The thing about Scipio, now, the only bit of evidence in this that really matters in the state of Florida, now granted, attempted murder is a lot different than armed burglary or anything like that, because at absolute minimum, if he pulled a gun in the state of Florida, he's guaranteed to be locked away for at least 10 years.
Yes.
So if the state of Florida is incredibly harsh about gun usage.
They have like a three-strike rule? Or is it some to that effect?
It's called 10-20 life. If you pull a gun, it's 10 years. If you use the gun, it's 20 years. And if you actually shoot somebody, it's life.
Okay.
I may not quite have that right, but the program is 10-20 life. And if you use a gun, it's definitely 10 years.
That's
so, cool. I mean, his career is over.
Yeah.
And he's currently sitting in jail. He's not a first-time offender. And this guy that he was with is definitely not a first-time offender. He's got a rap sheet 8 miles long.
Yeah.
And the Predators cut him on Friday night, right after the game. And, of course, now I think it's funny that he's on league suspension. You know, because he obviously was not around to have an exit interview.
No.
But he's not leaving. And he's not leaving jail anytime in the near future.
And this is where I wanted you to give a little bit of explanation, because you did it for me, is that I was able, you know, when I went over to the DOC website to check out their charges, there was only one fine or amount listed for bail, which was $5,000.
And that was for, I think it was one of the petty things that there was that bond listed for.
Yeah, and all of them else said zero, and now I thought that it was just a grand total of $5,000, but you actually corrected me.
No, they unless something has changed, and this is since, you know, the last I could tell you was on Saturday night, and this is now Wednesday night when we're taping this, but at least as of that point, and the information online hasn't changed. It still said the $5,000, you know, bond for whatever minor charge that, minor charge in relation to the rest of the rap sheet that he's got there. But no, he actually has no bond for the rest of it. And part of it is inevitably because he's a repeat offender. He has spent time in jail twice before. And part of it is because, according to all reports, he and his buddy there were not in any way, shape, or form negotiating, cooperating with the police. Okay. So those two things are what usually gets you put away for a while. And especially in the Central Florida area where this happened, a lot of the detention centers are very strict about bond. And how there either is an outrageous number to get out when the crime is bad enough,
right?
Or the number is non-existent. And in this case, the judge when he was brought in, it was determined that he was going to sit in jail until this was tried.
Oh, so the DA decided, the prosecutor said, yeah. I guess they put forward, or you know, they were able to convince the judge not to give any bail, or only set it high enough where he wasn't going to be able to post it, and so he's going to be sitting until his arraignment.
Right, and I don't want to, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty in this country, but it's very clear that he committed a jailable offense, and it's pretty clear that that's the case. So, you know, regardless, he's definitely going to have to do time, and he certainly played his last game in this league.
Yep. No, it's, you know, such a good wide receiver to, you know, unfortunately having a guy like this who has had a checkered past, and it's...
And it's just, you know, the guy's father, Scipio's father, was in trouble in the past in a scam that he ran with the father of the guy sitting in jail with
exactly.
him. So it's like, you know, you hate to say some people were set up to fail, but Bobby Scipio was set up to fail.
Now, if you have not seen the information and the story that Adam broke, it is still available also on ArenaFan.com. It's another one of our ArenaFan originals on the side. If you can't find it, click on one of his ones that he's done recently, maybe the Johnny Curtin op-ed, and you will see the listing of them, and they'll all be there, and you can get caught up and see the pictures.
There's a lot of them there nowadays. I've been busy.
Yep.
You know, this was supposed to be a nice weekend where I did something nice for a charity, and it was all going to be great, and then all of a sudden I get Bobby Scipio's in jail and Johnny Curtin's dead.
Yeah, and you were on the field, actually. I saw that
I was actually on the field pregame.
Your pregame, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so, yeah, some good pictures for Libby's legacy. I'm still in the process of touching some of those up and sending it over to them because – God knows I'm not a professional photographer. There must have been 100 shots on my camera that I had to get rid of because they're just so just non-discernible. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a cool experience being on the field for, you know, pregame. This most of the pregame warm-ups and, you know, the pregame fireworks show and the national anthem and I was maybe about, I don't know, 5 yards away from the coin toss.
Nice.
So.
Very cool.
It was good. And there was a lot of pink there that night. So a lot of awareness for breast cancer.
And the balls had the pink stripe.
And I don't know if all the balls had the pink stripe, but I know at least the ball that started the game was played with the pink stripe.
Until it went.
I know a lot of them went into the stands, so it wouldn't surprise
me. Until it went into the stands, yeah.
Well, when Chris Leak is your quarterback, a lot of them are going into the stands.
Yeah. Now, it was something else that was broken at that game. It was something that was hinted upon by the PR director over at the AFL during their podcast this week, that there was going to be a big announcement. But basically Jerry Kearse came on in the third quarter and was talking about how – I remember the class to go back and check out the quotes, but, you know, to say the least is that – another developmental league is going to be started, and as Jerry said, in 2013.
Yeah, and this has become a very hot-button topic very quickly. And there are a lot of theories that are going on with this. There is a theory that a lot of teams out of the IFL, out of the PIFL, out of the AIFA, out of the Lone Star League and all those, that they're all going to come together, and those are going to be the teams.
Yep.
And that basically the it's bitterly ironic that we're talking about
ankle biters
joining, you know, the umbrella of the AFL. But what's interesting about it is that Commissioner Kurz said that basically the system they were trying to set up is almost like how baseball is.
Exactly.
You actually have minor league affiliates where presumably you would be able to go pluck a player off of those teams whenever you need them.
Right.
So theoretically at that point, I would assume that that's also an admission from the league that it's okay to do that now. I don't know whether it's looked upon as, you know, faux pas to do right, you know, at this very moment, or whether it's something that's going to have to wait, but that's what this is coming to. And if I'm, to be honest with you, if I'm a fan of a good PIFL team, I don't want anything to do with this.
It's going to be interesting. And one thing that I think that was very surprising to me is that usually if you have a big announcement like this, and I remember the segue that Anthony Heron used was that you usually don't come on and announce expansion until Arena Bowl, and, you know, basically segued into, you know, this is not expansion within the AFL, blah, blah, blah. But didn't you find it kind of weird that no press release was actually ever published by the league? Or do you think this was done in such a way where if this backfires or for whatever reason falls through, well, the league can basically say, well, we never officially announced it.
Well, that's – you may be onto something there, but I think what's more concerned, because the league did publish an interview today.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
That Anthony Heron had with Commissioner Kurz, but I think the only reason that this came up when it came up is because on the same night the grumblings began again about a work stoppage.
Yes.
And because the way it was put supposedly on the NFL Network broadcast was that Commissioner Kurz was trying to dispel some rumors or address some rumors. I don't know the exact terminology to use it. And I, sitting in Orlando, you know, at the game, sitting directly across, you know, across the field from Commissioner Kurz, was really wondering if he was going to address that work stoppage issue, because this is something that I know we haven't done a lot of reporting on, because we don't have a lot of hard – we really don't have – much in the way of hard facts to deal with, except for, you know, we now have some a little bit of new information. I don't know, Tim, whether you wanted to talk about this now or you wanted to table this.
If you want to go, we can add it in. Go ahead.
Okay, so I actually. Wait,
you know what? Actually, keep it off for a second. Let's finish talking about the new Dev League, and we'll go from there.
Okay, so I wonder. I can't help but wonder if the timing of that topic came out to kind of hush anything about the potential work stoppage that, for all we know, could be happening as soon as this week.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And it's funny, they talked about the union, Anthony was talking about the union to Commissioner Kurz in this actual interview, and, you know, he asked, does the talks with the union affect this new league? And he goes, no, they do not. It's important for us to reach an agreement with our players, so we're currently working to get that done. But this new league is too important to wait for the end of those discussions. Now, we know, and we've been talking about this constantly, we've seen the way that the teams are going through players. We've seen some of the poor play from these teams. Now, some of these teams are continuously collapsing, the turnover, etc., Adam. Is this the right time to start another developmental league?
Well, the only way that I would say that it is the right time is if the threat is really there that the PIFL and the IFL are going to overtake the AFL in importance. You know, at that point, you know, if this is the – again, we don't know this is the route that's being taken. This is just kind of one of the nasty little rumors that's being floated around there.
No, and the way Commissioner Kurz, by the way, he was asked –
he mentioned mid-market and small market.
Yeah, he goes, are teams from indoor leagues being considered? He goes, all viable options are being considered. We want the best fans, players, and owners from the markets that make the most sense. Membership fees will be low so that organizations can spend more money on things like our game system and advertising and marketing their team.
Why don't you do that with the AFL? But no, we've seen teams like the Green Bay Blizzard jump from the AF2 when that disbanded down to,
yes.
You know, instead of coming up to the AFL, going down, well, you know, air quotes,
right,
down to the IFL. And I think there are a couple other teams that did it as well, but that's the only one I know of immediately from 09. So it's not, it definitely doesn't seem to be without precedence that a team like a Green Bay, you know, the Green Bay Blizzard could come back into this developmental.
Green Bay, Tri-Cities, there was another one.
Yeah, I know there were plenty of them. I don't remember them off the top of my
head.
And
there are, and I think we mentioned before in years and weeks past, that there are some great long-time franchises that I think would be a good fit. But the question is, do these teams want to be under the Arena Football League banner?
And that's where it becomes interesting, because if you're how many cities are out there right now? I mean, how many cities do not have an indoor football team?
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, you could go back into Bossier Shreveport, you could go back into Birmingham, you could go back into Oklahoma City, you could go back into Tulsa. There are a lot of places you could go back to, but how many of these places, you know, like a Green Bay? Green Bay's got a team. Sioux Falls has a team. Omaha has a team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many of these cities are you going to be able to go into at this point? And if they're going to try something different, and because then that brings up the next question, are you going to put an AF2 team in a city where the AF2 already failed?
Yeah, exactly.
Are you going to give Austin back a team? Not if they're playing at the Frank Irwin Center, I can tell you that. Rent is too damn high.
Yeah, I know.
So I don't know where else you'd be playing in Austin, but I mean, I've got to imagine Doug McGregor's going to have a lot to do with this.
Oh, well, I mean, he still owns quite a few other teams, and, you know.
I mean, hell, he owned an entire division.
I know.
In the AF2. Yeah.
So, I think I'm going to just coin the term the AFD.
Yeah, because we now know they're not going to call it the AF2.
Yeah, so we'll just coin the term the AFD.
Even though what's funny about that is Commissioner Kurz used to call it the DAFL, the defunct AFL. Back
what?
When we were still wondering if we were going to be called the AF1.
Oh, really?
That's
okay. I didn't remember that.
So, that's kind of funny.
Wow. But, okay, you know, how many teams? I think it is, to me, it is a great idea to be like an affiliate to each team. I think that is a great idea.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Yep. I don't know how in practice it's really going to work.
Considering that we probably have, there are probably tons of the Nets and the Irons sitting around from.
Oh yeah, of course.
Defunct teams. So.
And they're already, and I think it's the I don't know if it's the PIFL or the IFL has already said they're going to play with the Nets next year.
I think it's the PIFL.
Because the patent is up on it, and nobody, you know, was able to do anything about it.
But it's funny how Commissioner Kurz is talking about paying for the game system. That's what I don't understand. Okay, I understand that the trademark and whatnot is up. Does the Arena Football League still own rights to the game system, though? What's the difference? You know, does it include the Nets?
Who knows? That's all legal jargon. That I can doubt it because, like I said, there if the PIFL or whichever four-letter league it was that said they were going to do it, if they're all gung ho about it, obviously they have the ability to do it. Unless the AFL is going to try, unless you know Arena Football One is going to try stopping them,
which I don't see them. Doing. I don't think they don't want to piss off a potential right now. They don't want to piss off potential
partner,
potential teams. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in your estimation, how many teams?
Who knows?
Max. No. In your opinion, how many do you think should it be? The same amount of AFL teams times two, or only one team? Because if you think about it, that would be a pretty good league. You have 17 teams, 18 teams in the AFL. You have one team per. One AFD team per AFL team. So
well, I think the question that I would like to pose is, are any teams going down? You know, are the Georgia Force and their 3,000 fans going down to the AF2?
Mm.
You know, I would say there's a pot. I don't think Georgia's going to be, you know, I think Georgia is just going to be defunct after this year. But I could see it happening. to some of these teams. So I think that the answer to my first question will answer my second question. I think if they're going to go with a 12-team AFL,
mm-hmm.
that, yeah, you could go with a 24-team developmental system. But I just, if you're going to go with 18 teams next year, I don't see 36 other teams.
No, I would say stick with one. But the thing is, then it comes to, you pull up a, now mind you, I don't know. It's,
you know what I would like to see with this is a system of promotion and relegation like they have in soccer in England.
It would be interesting.
I would love to see that. That would be awesome, because that would make some of these teams that are at the bottom of the league actually fight to keep their spot in the top level. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, you don't really want to. You really don't want to piss off some of these long-time teams that have been in.
You don't want to send Orlando down to the AF2.
That's the thing. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean,
well, I know it'll never happen.
But yeah, exactly. And I think another bad thing to that is that if it is a long-term a team that has, you know, a lot of history in the AFL. You really do not want to piss off the fans. If you know that you are a minor league team to the AFL, I know it seems sort of strange to say, but your fans are going to rebel, basically.
Now, I'm wondering whether the fans are going to rebel in Orlando already. They're 1-9. That's as good as minor league football.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. If this does come to fruition, you know, they did do this interview, so can we say this is as good as a PR? Possibly. Maybe they just didn't want to put out any more information about this league because they don't have any more information to give, or there's not any information that they want to give, a la the rule book. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch it throughout the rest of the year. Maybe there'll be more of an announcement come Arena Bowl time. As we know, Commissioner Kurz has a history of announcing a lot of stuff, major stuff at Arena Bowl. So, we will see. Now, to go forward with what you were mentioning before about the possible work stoppage, something came out on Twitter, if I'm not mistaken, again.
Came out through Gary DiPola from the Pittsburgh Tribune.
There we go, that's correct, yeah. Yeah. But we know DeSoto has been tweeting different stuff consistently. So, but this thing was a lot more than just a tweet. This was a pretty hardcore story.
Yeah, this was a full-blown Ivan Soto coming to this newspaper and saying, we are going on – a work stoppage is going to happen if nothing gets done.
Right.
Now, what we came to learn from the first time around, and the league players better have learned their lesson from this, is that, you know, they postured, and what happened is two teams ended up basically getting torn apart. Because they supposedly never had a real intent to actually go on strike. But, you know, the question is, you know, if you're the players, what leverage do you have right now? And I had a conversation with someone in the union, someone who has union membership, on Friday night, and I said to him, what leverage do you really think you've got?
Mm-hmm.
And his response to me was that not playing is the only leverage that they've got. And it really is.
It is.
But the question, and again, one of the questions that I posed to him is when with all of these new players that are coming in the league, are these guys joining the union? And, you know, there wasn't a good answer for me. So the question is there a team out there that can even say that it has 100% support for the union? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know, I don't really know if even in the locker rooms themselves, if there's really an answer to that. So it's very interesting. And I can tell you, I've spoken to Ivan Soto, and I've seen his list of requests. And basically the players have come down to $625 a week.
Okay.
I'm sorry, $650 a week, not $625 a week. Which is obviously a drastic, you know, decrease from their $1,500 a week where they started. But it just, you know, from what it sounds like, the league's not budging. The league's not going anywhere. They're offering the $500 a week like they were offering in week one, but it still seems like it's pretty much a take it or leave it type of situation. So, in my opinion, this is getting worse before it's getting better, and in my opinion, I would not be surprised if there's a game that something screwy happens in the very near future. if something doesn't get worked out. And it just, it doesn't seem like anything's going to get worked out.
And I think, I know there are fines from where if a team does not come out from the locker room at halftime within a certain amount, you know, before kickoff, I know there is a fine there. And I think it's a pretty hefty fine, if I remember correctly.
How hefty can it be at $400 a week?
Well, no, no, this goes directly to the team, though. That's the thing.
Goes
to the organization. Yeah.
I don't know whether the organization is going to be held liable for something that, you know, who knows what could happen with it.
Now, the other question, too, now, since we talked about, you know, the AFD, you know, prior, is that the league needs to be setting themselves up for salaries for next year, and they're going to have to set the levels at what the new developmental league will have.
It seems pretty clear to me the developmental league is going to be $200 per week.
$200 per week.
Or somewhere in that neck of the woods. Because that's what the PIFL is paying right now, and that's what the IFL is paying. They're paying $200-$250 a week. So that makes sense. You know, you figure we'll just, for argument's sake, we'll say that the players blink and they take the proposed CBA, you know, at $500 a week. Well, that's, you know, half the pay of what an AFL player is making.
Yeah.
So it would make sense to say $200 or $250 a week. Maybe some other sort of incentives in there for the lower level players. Yeah, but who knows? I mean, there's so many things that could be worked out with that. But that seems to be what a fair starting base would be. Of course, the other interesting question is whether the players in that league are going to join the AFLPU or not.
That's true too.
And whether the AFLPU will take them.
Yeah. Or if they can ever be. Oh, yeah, that's true. Because I don't remember the guys in the AF2 being part of the union.
In the past, they weren't.
Yeah.
But that doesn't. I mean, that's a whole new game now.
Usually,
it's no longer the AFLPA, it's the AFLPU.
Staying together, stronger in numbers, more numbers than possible. But as we're seeing right now, it really doesn't mean anything. You know, I think the league was forced into doing their original CBA because of the Guidry agreement. That's where it all started.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that all this stuff for the National Labor Relations Board, because both sides, the Arena Football One and the AFLPU,
yes,
have filed complaints against each other.
I saw them.
It's all public record, and I put the three complaints from this year in an article I wrote on, I think it was Saturday. About everything that was kind of going on in the league with the developmental league and with, you know, with all the stuff with
it's interesting
CPO and all those things.
It's interesting because
because what came out of it was nothing.
Exactly, and what's funny is that in one of them in particular, I think it was the PU was up against, was making a complaint against the league, but yet this person who was supposed to be there for an interview. Was supposed to show up or was doing an interview, had to leave, said to come back at another particular time to finish the interview, never came back to complete the interview. If you are complaining against an employer and you don't come back, how much credibility can you give to the complaint?
Yeah, it's rough. It really is.
It's a great read, though. So reading some of that stuff, as I said, the amount of information that is available in the as far as what the United States has available online. You know, the United States government has online. It's just astonishing.
Oh yeah, and if you want to see, you know, anything having to do with the Guidry thing, there's some stuff with the Guidry thing on here. Just go to NLRB.gov and search for anything that says Arena Football in it.
Yep. Very interesting, and I did not know that the league even made a complaint. I think it was unfair. Them was unfair labor practice or I'm trying to remember what they were.
Yeah, they were talking, basically doing the same thing with the unfair labor practices that the NLRB.
Bargaining in bad faith. Bargaining in bad faith. I think that's what they used. And they were, they made the complaints. They've already been ruled on. All three of these complaints have been ruled on.
Well, we do know there's another one out there.
Yeah, but they got nowhere. Let's think.
Well, no. I mean, we know there's another one that has not been ruled upon.
No,
yet.
But the original
that the PU is has lodged a complaint against against Arena Football One.
Yeah,
and it goes back to the meeting that was had in April between the AFLPU and the commissioner.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We hear this. We didn't really blink an eye. The story came out. I know when it happened week one of the year. A ton of hits and stuff like that. This thing comes out. There's really nobody blinked. Period. You know.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
The fans didn't come. You know, the story wasn't there. It was one story. It was a huge story, but yet,
because nothing has changed.
I know.
I mean, nothing. The only thing that's changed is the amount of money that the players are asking for. And the truth of the real truth of the matter, the 95% of the fans in this league don't give one damn how much the players on the field are making. They don't. And the brutal truth of the matter, I don't care either, because it's not going to change the game right now. It's not going to change for the rest of the year.
No, it won't.
Guys are not going to mysteriously come out of the woodwork for $625 or $650 instead of $400.
Right.
They're not.
No.
So, I mean, I could really give one damn less either. And I, if I don't give a damn, I don't know why anybody else should either. To me, this is just Ivan Soto talking. It really is.
I don't think there would have been an issue if the pay structure had not been changed, getting rid of the three marketing players.
No, this was an issue last year, too. You remember, they said they were contemplating a demonstration during the Arena Bowl.
That's true. Yes, that's right.
So, I mean, I really hope if they're going to do something, they do it sooner than later. Because if they pull this crap at the Arena Bowl in New Orleans, it's going to be it's going to be total mayhem.
It'll be mayhem. We may say goodbye to the NFL Network. We may
say goodbye to the Arena Football League.
Yep. Yeah. So
that seems like it's the only end game for the players. The players are money or bust, and the league is we'll find players.
Yeah, they'll find players, but you know the thing is they'll have to continue because as we're seeing now, right now the AFL is an outlet. It is an outlet for the you know there are players being taken by the other leagues, as we've seen. You know, Jacksonville just had Michelle Robinson taken again. He's coming up here to Montreal to play for the Alouettes, or at least to sign a contract since training camp starts on Sunday.
And he'll make more training camp than he will in a week in the AFL.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, there does need to be an outlet. Is it going to be the AFL or is it going to be the other alphabet leagues? Because I don't know. Nobody's blinking right now. Remember the old slogan, don't blink?
Yeah, good one.
Yeah, nobody's blinking. Nobody seems like nobody's batting an eye. So, we'll keep an eye on this one.
I have my ear to the ground consistently, okay. So we'll see.
List came out, and I think this is one of the top 25 lists came out, was just released today, and actually I saw it right before we started broadcasting. Some of these lists have been a little bit of contention between where everybody has been ranked. We had our issues with the top 25 quarterbacks, and we are still – so far we're on par. We really haven't had an issue yet so much so with the top 25 players of all time. We're just getting there. But the top 25 list for all-time wide receivers was released. And it's funny, almost immediately, we had a contention with somebody on the list.
Well, I have a contention with a lot of people on the list.
Yeah. Again, we came and – anyways, let's – first of all, this is what it is. 25 is Jesse Schmidt. 24, T.T. Tolliver. 23, Gary Mullen. 22, Herky Walls. 21, Will Pettis. 20, Darrell Hammond. 19, Marcus Nash. 18, Gary Compton. Number 17, Dwayne Dixon. And number 16, Kevin Swain. First one you mentioned to me, Jesse Schmidt.
Jesse Schmidt, the guy who was on the list because Bobby Scipio no longer will be on the list.
Guessing too, because I tried to pose the question to see if we could get some information about what would happen would this affect Bobby Scipio in any way, shape, or form? I wouldn't be surprised if it did, and I think this
would have been approximately where Scipio fell.
Right.
When you really think about it, and it seems painfully clear to me that Bobby Scipio will not be on this list, and they picked somebody basically to throw in there. But I have a massive, massive problem with I mean, it even says on the bottom with both Tolliver. And with Jesse Schmidt,
yeah.
That there are three active players that are on the list of top 25 wide receivers. We damn well know the third one is going to be James Rowe. So I have a big question here. First of all, was Jesse Schmidt ever that much the best receiver on Iowa? I mean, Todd Blythe was just as good as he was, and was putting up numbers just as good as he was for 2 years. So, but my big bones of contention with him are Rod Windsor, Tiger Jones, and Donovan Morgan, all of which I think were a lot and are a lot better receivers. Windsor, okay, I could see making the argument. He was only in the league 2 years, but he put up arguably the best year wide receivers ever had in this league, and he did it in 16 games.
The funny thing is, Adam, if you want to put it that way, then we could say, well, Kurt Warner was only – we go back to the quarterback list. Kurt Warner was only in the league for three.
Yeah.
But my dude went to Drew Arena Bowls, blah, 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 you know. But still, anyway, if we're talking about the wide receivers now. But, yes.
Well, you know, I mean, Rob Windsor had almost 350 receptions in 2 years. You know, I mean, dude had 83 touchdowns, and he did it in, let's see, he did it in 16 and 50, he did it in 31 career games. So he was clearly a monster. And Tiger Jones, I mean, I have a lot bigger problem here with not putting Tiger Jones on this list. Just in the last 3 years, Jones has more receptions, more yards, and more touchdowns than Jesse Schmidt. And, oh, by the way, he had 96 catches, 1,214 yards, and 29 touchdowns for Georgia in 2008. Mm-hmm. Tiger Jones absolutely should be on this list, and he clearly is not going to be. He's going to be one of the guys in the top 30 in receiving yards that's going to be shafted out of this list. And really the same is going to be said about Morgan. Again, another guy who started in 2008, has battled some injuries this year, but has had at least 110 receptions all three of his years. Already has 120 touchdowns and over 5,200 receiving yards. So a lot better numbers than what Jesse Schmidt has. So I've immediately got an issue with him. And I've also got an issue with Gary Mullen. And I understand that, you know, you want to include some of the old guys. And
I mean, he did lead the league in scoring in 1990, and he does still hold the record for most career Arena Bowl receiving yards.
And he played a lot of Arena Bowls. But in the end, this is a guy that had 72 career touchdowns. And even by that standard of his period of time, Brown was a better receiver, Wagner was a better receiver, mm-hmm. Herky Walls was a better receiver, mm-hmm. and it's even mentioned on their list. Herky Walls is one spot above Gary Mullen. Gary Mullen is not ranked in the top 30 in any category in the AFL. And, you know, when you look down the list, also with Gary Compton, Gary Compton is ranked 9th in league history in receiving yards, and he's way down here on the list. So those are my big gripes, because you know all the guys who have at least 10,000 yards are going to be on this list. And there are 10 more of them.
Yeah, I think we came up with 15 total names. I mean,
there are 15 more names on the list, and we absolutely know Damian Harrell, Barry Wagner, Chris Jackson, Eddie Brown, Lawrence Samuels, Mike Horacek, Corey Fleming, Greg Hopkins, and I would say Randy Gatewood and George LaFrance and Hunky Cooper are absolutely going to be on this list. Mm-hmm. Stevie Thomas should be on this list. You know, if you're going to put Will Pettis on, you got to put Calvin Jeksonator on, right?
Yeah.
And if you're going to put Kevin Swain on, you should put Tyrone Jones on, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's at least 13 more guys, and we know none of the rest of them are active.
I'm happy to say that we will be able to see the final list. We're going to be able to talk about this and at length next show, because the list will have been released, I think the last five or whatever it is, will be released by Friday.
And it's very clear who, you know, the very top guys are going to be on this list.
You know, so, you know, it's just as long as you get those five straight, you can win either a football, an AFL magazine, or another copy of that Kurt Warner thing.
And again, who the hell knows? If Shredrick Bonner is the best, quarterback.
You never know.
Who knows?
Oh, my God.
But it's going to be funny if it's not Eddie Brown. It's going to be really funny if it's not Eddie Brown. The guy voted the number one player all time 5 years ago may not be the number one receiver.
Dude, as we have seen already.
Well, that would be the biggest farce of all.
Also seen that over in 6 years, because this is just a modification of a couple of people on this committee, it's made a hell of a big difference.
Yeah,
like,
and
who
I also
would have thought, you know?
I also want to know with this, is the league going to do a top 25 Ironman?
Oh, that would be nice.
Because if they're not going to, where do you class Barry Wagner? Do you class him as a wide receiver? What do you class him by? Because I can make the argument that he should be one of the top 25 receivers, one of the top 25 defensive backs, and probably one of the top 25 total, overall defensive players. Uh-huh. in this league too. And he's clearly the best Iron Man. In my eyes, anyway.
Curious to know. It's true. Curious to know where they were. And I wouldn't be surprised. The league's going to be putting out a lot of lists. I mean, are they going to go defensive players next? You can't just go completely on the offensive side.
I want top 25 kickers.
Top 25 kickers.
And coaches and offensive linemen. That's, yeah.
And it's going to be interesting. We won't have to wait to Arena Bowl to finish this. Luckily. Next week will be very interesting. I'm sure I can see getting an email. As soon as that last one comes out, you know, when we're all chatting on the game on Friday, if it does come out on Friday, it's going to be very interesting to see. Very interesting. You know what? I think the next list is probably going to be 15-5 or 15-6. Tomorrow will be 15-6.
Friday, as long as it's 15-10, we can pretty much cut and paste the rest unless there's
yeah,
no shots.
Well, there's only today's, you know, taping today, Wednesday. Put out one tomorrow, and then put the top five on Friday.
Yeah.
So we'll know by Friday. Join us in the chat room. Watch it explode. Just in case. Something, and it's the way that our crew at Arena Fan is able to come up with these significant dates and milestones in league history. Sometimes Adam can completely boggle my mind.
Thank you, Andy Lepuzniak.
Yes. Andy came up with a gem this week. A complete nut gem, and it happened to be one of the game that would be listed up there on one of the best all time. Not only in total scoring, but, you know, as far as gameplay and whatnot.
Oh, I called it one of the 10 best games of all time.
San Jose became the first team in AFL history to win a game, but never led in regulation.
That's pretty impressive.
That's crazy, and I really wanted to ask Andy I didn't get a chance. What was the next team that was closest to doing it? And I was trying to think of the games offhand.
You have a feeling it would be a game like when L.A. beat Orlando with a gun or something like that. When Detroit beat New York in the playoffs and something just like that. So, yeah, it probably is the last play of the game. But, yeah, that's very – I mean, let's just take a sec to recognize that game for all of what it was. I mean, James Rowe passed Barry Wagner for the fourth most touchdowns by a receiver in league history. This is why I'm saying this is the one active guy you know is going to be on the list for those wide receivers. But, I mean, Mark Green, Russ Micna, up until the last pass that he threw, was having one of the best games an AFL quarterback's ever had.
Yes. Yeah.
If Chicago scores on that last drive, it goes down as the highest scoring game in AFL history.
Even the touchdown without the 2-point convert, I think it would have been the highest ever, because I think it was 168?
47.
Huh?
It would have been 167 that point.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So they would have needed an extra point, but they clearly would have gone for two.
Yeah.
We
don't know. We don't know what Coach McMillan is going to do. You never know.
But everybody who gets the ball second goes for two. But anyway, I mean, it was a remarkable game. It really was. It was a game that had every twist and turn you ever could have imagined down the stretch, including San Jose really looking like it was left for dead with less than a minute left when Chicago had the ball in the lead.
Yeah, I know. I know. I'm looking at the box score now. I mean, there were only two.
Another 400-yard passing game for Mark Reed, by the way.
There were only two ties. Two ties in this game. One was in the first, and one was three. Three ties. You know, one was at the gun. And it's just, it's crazy. I think Chicago was up by 12 points at one point.
And five receivers with three touchdowns?
Yeah.
And you know, obviously Johnny Curtin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Scoring the winning touchdown.
Yep, scoring the winning touchdown. So definitely... definitely an impressive game.
417 yards for Grebe. It's not like Russell Micna was a slouch himself. I mean, 300.
No, Micna going into overtime was 25 of 30 for 351 yards with 8 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, he threw that pick and that really, you know, that it lost the game and ruined the day. But yeah, you know,
it took a good route though by the defensive men. I mean, the ball was just a little bit, you know, it was basically left up there, and that's how the interception came about. But
it happens in this league.
It does. But it was a great game. I was actually happy to be able to. It's funny. What is it, Adam, with these West Coast teams and the games, the memorable games that they have played?
Yeah, Utah played a game, came down the wire this week, too.
You know, I mean,
So did Spokane.
I don't know what it is. You know, and then we had Arizona.
They're good teams.
We had Arizona in the Arena Bowl last year, and that came down to the last play. You know, look at the most high. Look at the highest scoring games in league history. I think 3/4 of them, I think, would be Western teams were involved in these games.
But then tell me you saw Bojan Shreveport coming.
No. No.
Yeah, nobody saw that one coming.
So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, if you take out the games that didn't involve the teams from the West, they all pretty much sucked this week.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacksonville-Orlando was a snoozer. Milwaukee-Tampa Bay was a good game. That was a pretty good game.
Yes.
But Kansas City-Georgia was another one of these god-awful, you know, command games. Yeah. And Philly and Cleveland turned out to be a god-awful Sunday game.
New Orleans was closer for a moment, and then just Arizona just blew them out of the water.
Yeah, all of a sudden, yeah, New Orleans just couldn't stop turning the ball over.
We won't talk about Georgia, Kansas City.
Except for the fact that Matt Gutierrez is up for MVP of the week again after going 23 of 33 for 228 yards with 3 touchdowns and a pick.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Awesome, awesome numbers.
One funny note, by the way, speaking of Kansas City, they are on a 2-game win streak, right?
Yep.
They had a 2-game win streak last year also. This is their first 2-game win streak since that time. Their win streak this year was at the exact same period as it was last year.
Yeah, when I saw that, it was really funny.
I was like, how is that possible?
And it was really funny.
Kansas City was a somewhat better team last year.
Yeah.
Somewhat better team.
Look, the bye week has a better team this year than Kansas City. couple more interesting notes from this game. I'm always amazed when I see things like this on the box score, but you actually had 3 different guys who played quarterback in college, one of which is still a quarterback in the AFL, catching passes in this game. Sevel Newton for Georgia, 9 catches, 62 yards, and a touchdown.
You're right.
Xavier Lee, 4 catches, 36 yards. And the backup freaking quarterback, Zach Eskridge, caught 2 passes.
Oh, my God.
So, take that all for what it's worth. And, if I'm Kevin Eakin, I'm not getting used to my starting quarterback salary. Russ Micna. How about, not Russ Micna, same guy. Yeah. RJ Archer, this week, skipping the game for his wedding.
Second quarterback to do it this week, this year.
3 weeks.
And the funny thing is that both the teams that were left high and dry because of these previously scheduled events, both lost.
Got their asses kicked, yep.
And the funny thing is that the same team was here.
Chicago played Georgia that week.
Yeah.
Chicago got the ass kicked by Georgia.
Yeah. So,
that's way more than we wanted to talk about that game.
There's also, we do have some perfect streaks still left in the AFL. Both Philly and Tampa are undefeated on the road. Both 6-0.
No. Philly 6-0 on the road. Tampa Bay 6-0 at home.
Oh, sorry, 6-0 at home. But Tampa Bay is also perfect in a bad way. They're 0-6 away from.
Tampa Bay 6-0 at home for just the second time in team history. You kind of figure with all those dominating years that they had that they would have done it, but they actually, you know, it's only in 2003.
Well,
the year they went perfect at home. That they ended up that they made it to 6-0.
Well, you also think too. When were they? How many home games did they have that year?
That year they were 8-0 that year.
Okay.
But I mean, every one of those years, short of the very first one, they played at least 6 home games,
uh-huh.
And they lost their very first home game. And we'll foreshadow that one in a second. But just a couple notes on that Tampa Bay game because I was there and kept my close eye on it. Victor Williams, like I said earlier, got hurt in that game, left with a groin injury. Did not come back in the game. Don't know what his status is now, but that may be why Milwaukee made the move to pick up Nate Force. Adam Tadish, don't look to see him again, possibly ever. From what we've heard, he had a very, very nasty hip injury, and I was there, and I just go watch the Joe Theismann tape. It looks a lot like that.
I think the Joe Theismann tape, and I think of the Cincinnati defensive man who also broke his leg in the Super Bowl too. I don't remember his name though, but I remember that one.
The only thing I'm thinking about is when Pete Rose ran over his friend in an All-Star game.
Oh yeah, that too.
I forget. Not Ray Fosse. I forget.
I see the footage in my head. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I wasn't born yet, or I was just barely born. But also for Tampa Bay, Deontay Bolden. Some better news to report on him. He was put in the hospital for precautionary reasons. A couple plays before Tadish, he went head first into the wall. They were afraid he had a neck injury. Good news, he is out of the hospital. Doesn't appear like he's going to have any long-term issues, on that, according to the team, but he is, I believe they put him on injured reserve, but if they didn't put him on injured reserve, they're certainly not expecting him to play anytime in the near future.
We also had another thing that we were going to just quickly touch on. We mentioned him last week about Nick Hill. He was actually activated for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, Nick Hill, we broke this one yesterday on Arena Fan, in and amongst everything else going on. Nick Hill activated. The Storm do have three quarterbacks on their active roster. Going to be interesting to see what happens this week in Jacksonville. By all accounts, it seems as though this week it's going to be Steve Wassel.
Yeah. But how much of a short leash is he going to have?
Well, it's interesting because I tend to doubt they're going to make three quarterbacks active. The question is, does he have a leash at that point? Because they're not going to put in Matt Grothy because they're obviously unfortunately for Steve Wassel, if this is what turns out to be the case, this may be an audition whether he keeps a job because either he or Grothy are going to get cut.
They can go to the AFD.
The IFL?
Whatever they call it, yeah.
but that's an interesting situation out of Tampa Bay for sure.
And we can talk about it, obviously, with the game coming up for them, but we're going to mention it, too. I think we've forgotten to mention with the San Jose game about James Rowe passing Barry Wagner.
Yeah, we didn't mention that. No. Yep, 266. Well, 267 now. He had three touchdowns in that game.
Yep. Fourth overall, right?
Yep.
Yeah, fourth
overall. And with one more year, if he keeps going, he may do it this year, but it's not likely. He could become the fourth guy to have 300 touchdown receptions in this league.
Wow. And one thing that we actually noticed while we were going over the score books and the game books and whatnot, Philadelphia's Derrick Ross is now the all-time leading rusher when it comes to attempts in a single game versus Cleveland. He set a league record with 22 rushing attempts. 21.
Yep, sorry. We just want to make sure we get this right, so.
I need to change my Twitter. I need to change social media.
Nice job, Tim. Everybody watching on social media, Tim is going to be changing that, I guess, probably while I talk about this.
Yes.
You need a second.
Breaking the record for Dan Alexander, who set it with 19 back in 2007.
Yeah, I'll talk about this for a second while you go fix that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so Dan Alexander, that year in 07 was the year that he scored a touchdown in every single game, and he was just carrying the ball all over the place. But Derrick Ross, 21 rushes. I don't know what that's saying for Cleveland. It almost seems like it's a bit of a disrespect. But John Dutton was awful in that game, and they were only about 300 some odd passing yards in the game as a whole. And I mean, Mark Greve had more than that by himself. Actually, Greve and McNa both had more passing yards than that by themselves. Another game where the Cleveland D plays okay, but it looks a little bit deceiving because the clock obviously did a lot of running with Derrick Ross carrying the ball all those times. So we knew if there was a record, if there's a rushing record to break, Derrick Ross is probably going to break it. He's going to smash the league record this year for most rushing yards in a season, and possibly this week. Especially against the Orlando defense, could become the 10th man in league history to rush for 1,000 yards in a career.
Yep.
You need more time, or are you good?
Almost done. I'm going to get it released out on Twitter.
So, okay. Well, I mean, but I'll talk some more about this then. Philly, basically what this does for Philadelphia is it pretty much gives it home field advantage throughout the playoffs. Cleveland's not going to catch the soul at this point. They're two games back. And truth of the matter, you know, with Georgia losing to Kansas City, it's two games in the loss column for either Georgia or Tampa Bay to catch them. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So Philly is probably, I mean, especially with a de facto bye week this week coming against Orlando, probably just going to run away, from the rest of the Eastern Division and from the rest of the American Conference as a whole.
There it is. That's weird. No, it's not in a place where I expected it to be. Oh, the joys of...
The joys of social media?
The joys of, yeah, messing up on social media. Here it is.
What's the next topic we got, Tim? I'll throw that one out there.
Oh, well, we're actually... Well, we have... well, we talk about the games, but we also have a couple of possible milestones just coming up this week.
Let me see here. Let me pull up my sheet. Russ Mikna has 247 career touchdowns, three more, and he'll be the 24th man in league history to have at least 250 touchdowns. He's going to pass John Fitzgerald this week and should move into 24th place. Mm-hmm. And Nick Davila, with the ridiculous tear that he's been on over the course of these last couple weeks, is four touchdowns short of 300 for his career. And he is going to be the 19th quarterback in league history to hit that mark. And that's awfully, awfully impressive, you know, for a man that obviously has only been playing in this league for just 3 years. So those are the passing records we're looking at now.
And Derek Ross was set up for one, too, if I'm not mistaken.
I mentioned the one for Ross while you
were
being away. The only other thing to kind of keep an eye on, even though it's obviously – I mean, borrowing an effort that we've never seen before. Mark Grieve is 20 touchdowns short from 900. So he's going to get there probably in these next few weeks. So that's definitely going to be something interesting to keep an eye on, as well as he has arguably his best statistical year.
No, you see a lot of the – yeah, it's, I agree.
Certainly in quantity is going to be his best statistical year.
No kidding. No kidding. I mean, it's such a change from last year. It's like two totally different quarterbacks.
Yeah, he's still throwing a lot of picks, but he's also got a lot.
Not as many, though.
No, not nearly as many. I mean, the only good news for Mark Grieve about throwing 25 picks last year is Tommy Grady may be the first guy to throw 50 in a damn season if he keeps this up.
Oh, I know.
I mean, Grady's got 17 already, and you know, he's probably going to break the record, even though he's only had a few bad games. Oh, by the way, he's also probably going to throw for about 140 touchdowns.
Just...
And over 5,000 yards. You know, no big deal.
Yeah, I know. We have made some corrections to our schedule, so we finally have the games correct for this week. But we only have one Friday game this week, Adam.
Yeah, and I'm going to give some more props to Andy for coming up with this one. He sent an email to me, asked me to do a story on it this week.
Yeah.
I just don't have time, but we'll mention it now.
Friday, which obviously is June 1st,
yeah.
2012.
So... Back on June 1st, 1991, the Thunderdome opened its doors for the first time as the Tampa Bay Storm played the Orlando Predators. So, of course, Andy's logic, which would have been a perfectly sound one to use, is in the 25th anniversary season, why not commemorate the first anniversary of the game? Would have been a great game to put on Friday Night Football, whether it be in Orlando or Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I understand. Hindsight is 20/20. We didn't know that Orlando was going to be one of the worst teams in the league.
No.
But any time these teams play, it's still something to be seen, for sure. But no, instead we have, you know, Cleveland and Iowa, where, you know, 7,500 of our closest friends in the cornfields, you know, are going to be are going to be involved in that one. It's going to be a far, far cry from that game in 91, when I'll pull up the number right now. It was 10,354, packed themselves into the Thunderdome.
And final score was?
Orlando 51, Tampa Bay 38.
Which started it, a long, long rivalry, 49 games to date.
And a couple of Arena Bowls.
And, yeah, a couple of Arena Bowls. So it's Yeah. It would have been, you know, I'm surprised. There are a lot of other 25th anniversary things that I wish the league would have done. You know, I'm working on something, and I'm hoping to have it out to you next week. It's going to be an interview with the Milwaukee Mustangs. As some of you may remember, they are going to be having a throwback game this week on the 8th. 8th of June versus the Philadelphia Soul, and we hope to have some information and an interview with the team concerning their throwback uniforms, how it came to be, et cetera, et cetera. So we hope to have that on the podcast and as an Arena Fan original. But I, you know, why they haven't done more 25th anniversary stuff? You know, hyping up, you know, all these lists are fine and dandy, Adam, but, you know, let's.
Yeah, it's you know very I mean? Clear it's, that the Orlando-Tampa Bay rivalry really has been the staple of the league. It really has been.
I think we've been good too. Let's have another. You know, as I said before, let's have another San Jose-Arizona. Let's have another one. You know, they could have done that this week. You know, it could have been.
But it's just the date of significance.
Oh, that's true too. But you know, bring up a rivalry week. When was the first time that Arizona and San Jose played?
Short of Arizona and San Jose and Orlando and Tampa Bay, well, what else are you pitting against each other? Pittsburgh and Philly? Chicago and Milwaukee or Chicago and Iowa?
I wish there had been more throwback games this year. You know, that type of thing. Hopefully we can
spend less money on jerseys, spend more money on players.
Remember, this is a Milwaukee team that has 4 set of uniforms this year. I'm gonna find out why. See if we can find out why. You know, that's a big extra cost for one game. You know,
because they can.
Yeah. So Friday, one game, NFL Network, Cleveland at Iowa. You know, we saw.
This is a big game.
It still is. Yes.
It's absolutely a big game because there's absolutely playoff implications on the line for both of these teams.
Yeah. Gladiators lead the overall series since the return of the league, 2-0. Really, it doesn't mean, actually, both games have been blowouts. But mind you, this is not the same Iowa team as last year with Brad Banks in any way, shape, or form.
No, but unfortunately for this Iowa team, this defense is still atrocious. You know, if you're Iowa, you're 3 games back with 7 to play, so the margin for error is really just about nil for the Barnstormers. Yeah. But Cleveland looked bad last week.
They did.
Against Philly. But still, Cleveland's defense is still playing a lot better than Iowa's defense is. And in the end, with Jacksonville and to an extent New Orleans starting to breathe down Cleveland's neck, for one of those last playoff spots, I think the Gladiators are going to get back on track this week.
Interesting. Now, we know stats really don't mean anything, but Steve Tunn's overall record versus Coach Owensy, 2-7 in his life.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, come on. Tunn was with Grand Rapids for how many of those years? For how many of those games in Chicago? You know, in Chicago had Owensy and all that.
God, I'm looking at the game here. You know, it's just seeing. You know, Cleveland. I know it is going to be a very big game for both of these teams. Iowa's coming off of a loss to Spokane, one of the good games also last week. You know, Cleveland only puts up 33 points. Basically doing nothing in the third quarter, being outscored 20-0.
Yeah, and with Iowa going on the road next week to Arizona, and the following week to San Antonio, this is a game they've got to win.
The thing is, though, if John Dutton has another, mind you, both quarterbacks did not do anything with Philadelphia either. You know, Dan Rodabot wasn't, you know, that good either. But if Dutton has another 10 of 23 game, 2 touchdowns, they're losing. J.J. Rattering, J.J. Rattering and Jesse Schmidt will just smoke them. So I think in my case I'm looking at this game and I'm gonna give Iowa a little bit of a.
It wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah. Southern Division matchup Saturday. Yeah. Wow.
Always great games.
New Orleans, Georgia. Georgia has their quarterback back.
R.J. Archer's. You know, here again, gone tomorrow, here again, gone tomorrow is here again. you know, I look at the Force and I see a team that's 6-5, that plays with, you know, about 2,000 fans per game, seemingly, and is getting outscored by over 40 points and just got killed by Kansas City. I don't care who your quarterback is. You should not be getting killed by Kansas City.
No, you shouldn't be.
You know, I think New Orleans is the better team. You know, a game and a half back, but it just seems like New Orleans is just the better club.
They are. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah,
and again,
quarterback wise too, it's more consistent of a consistency within the quarterback situation. You know, position four.
Yeah, and we know that you know, we'll talk about Tampa Jacksonville in a minute, but you know, one of those two teams is going to be in first place in this division. These are two big Southern Division games because somebody's got to get in the damn playoffs. And probably two of these teams have to get in the playoffs.
Now, funny thing is, too, and I know this dates back to their original meetup back in 2004, but Georgia leads the overall series, Adam, 8-2, and Georgia has won 8 straight games. Now, mind you, since they've returned, the AFL has returned, Georgia's 2-0, and they've done it pretty handily.
Well, last year the Voodoo were terrible.
Yeah, that's the thing.
This year they're only bad.
Yeah.
But I think Georgia has been doing this for smoke and mirrors all year, and I think last week's game was the beginning of the end.
Well, it showed. It showed. I mean, for you to lose to Kansas City.
There's no way this team can be better this year than it was last year with Maurice Purifoy on the team, you know, all those guys. There's no way this Georgia team can be better than last year's Georgia team. No. And I think this team is a product of a weak, weak schedule. They've lost to Orlando and Kansas City, for crying out loud.
I know. It's overrated team. Yes. I would call them an overrated team. Sorry,
and they didn't put up 30 points in either of those games. That's the third time they've been held in the 20s this year.
Yeah, it's pathetic. It's pathetic. Tampa Bay, Jacksonville. As you're saying,
huge game.
I don't think Jacksonville losing Michelle Robinson will make that much of a difference. He wasn't there for that many games, anyways. Quarterback situation, question, you know, is Hill going to be active?
You got to doubt it. You really gotta doubt it. Even if he is, you know, he's been in camp since Tuesday.
Well, how hard is it to learn 10 plays?
Well, I mean, it's still a whole new set of receivers. You know, it's a totally new team for Nick Hill.
It is. Yeah. Well, mind you, come on, you don't know anything, just go to pre-shake. He's been consistent all year.
There's a big difference between a quarterback and a receiver.
Yeah.
You know, a receiver, run really fast, jump really tall, and when the ball gets on your hands, you know, catch it.
Now, I guess the only thing going for Tampa Bay, one bad thing, they're on the road.
But they are in the state of Florida.
They are in the state of Florida.
Make that argument.
Yeah.
One way or the other, something's got to give in this game.
Jacksonville leads the overall series 4-1 with Tampa winning the game earlier in March. That was their first win versus Jacksonville in their history.
Yeah, the Sharks are playing a lot better football right now, though. I mean, they've won a couple games in a row. Granted, this hasn't been much of a schedule that they've played this year. These 5 wins, most of them have been against crap. But it's still a team that's starting to get it, I think. The bottom line here is going to be for Steve Wassel. If he turns the ball over 3 times in this game, the Storm aren't going to win.
No.
It's not going to be a pretty game, I'll tell you that. It's going to be a game with you know, 80, maybe 90 points in it, in all likelihood. Because the Jacksonville offense, I know it's, you know, you see 55 points against Orlando. It was an ugly 55 points. So I don't know. I like the Sharks in this game, but it's, you know, it's for first place in the division, and it's going to be billed as such. And when you look back at it, these are not, you know, exactly the defending champion Jacksonville Sharks, but it's still a coaching, it's still a well-coached team.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, you've got coaches from the last 2 Arena Bowls playing against each other in this one.
That's right. You're right.
I'm sorry. That's, yeah, 11-10. I'm sorry. Yeah. I mean, you was the coordinator, but still.
Yeah. Orlando, Philadelphia. Well,
best team in the league against the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
Hey, look at it this way. Orlando was up by over 20 points against Philadelphia. windows fell on.
That's true. That's true.
So, this one's going to be bad. I can't wait to see a point spread in this game. This point spread might be 20, and it might be justified. This is going to be, Chris Leak's going to get picked off like 15 times in this game.
Yeah, Leak just has not been the face of the franchise.
I mean, the Predators have 3 quarterbacks that all have 15 touchdowns this year.
Oh,
that's it.
That is pathetic.
That's bad. That's really bad.
Yeah, considering that some of the totals that, you know, continue.
I mean, Kansas City is catching up points with Mr. National Guard MVP.
Man, wow. Yeah, I think you and I don't have any qualms about calling this one Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah. Most questions, how many points does Philly want to win by?
Yeah, I know. I was just trying to think. What is the over-under on points that Philadelphia would score?
That's a question, because Orlando's defense is good enough. Hmm. Orlando's defense can hold Philly in the 40s or the 50s. I mean, hell, if it wasn't for the offense, the team would, you know, Philly would have been held in the 40s the first time around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not the defense that I'm worried about. It's the, you know, if Philly puts up 55, is Orlando going to get half of that? The answer's probably not.
Yeah. Utah, Kansas City. Last time these teams met in 2011, Utah won by 1 point. Mind you, it was a different team.
Welcome back to the, welcome back to the AFL games that you get to play now, Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Utah needs a get better game, and this is a great time to be running into Kansas City. Utah's lost 3 in a row. The offenses look good. The defenses look god-awful and has even gotten mocked by an opposing quarterback.
Yep.
Somehow I don't think the guy who started off the year as Nick DeVito's backup is going to be doing the same type of jabbing.
Thing is, though, you know what? I think the longer the Kansas City hangs around, it may scare Utah even more, but I just don't see, you know.
City's offense hasn't scored 50 points in almost a calendar year.
Oh, no, I know, but what I'm saying is that when it comes to Kansas City, really nobody shows up. Yeah, they had 5,000 show up last week, which I was very surprised to hear that crowd number, by the way, versus Georgia, of all things. I don't see Utah. I see Grady easily putting up another 10 TDs.
Yeah, I think this game's going to be an ass beating.
Yeah.
Oh, and I don't think he's going to get 10 TDs, just like last week when Arizona pulled the plug on DeVito in the third quarter. I think that's what you're going to see again in this game.
The funny thing is, I was very surprised to see DeVito. New Orleans was just god-awful. That's a problem. Yeah, as we said before, they just seemed like they just gave up. It was close, and then
they had a case of the Orlando Blues at halftime.
San Jose, Milwaukee. Could be a pretty interesting game.
A different situation in a different time, I would have said that. But man, those 37s are going to be on those uniforms for San Jose.
No, that's true too. That's true too.
I feel bad for Milwaukee because it's like Milwaukee has run into every bad situation this year. You know, they're 3-17. They've been outscored by 26 points this year. So that tells you that this team is competitive. I think this game will be competitive. But in the end, man, it's how do you pick against San Jose just from an emotional standpoint?
I agree. Yeah, I think they just started practicing yesterday. Was it yesterday or today? I'm trying to catch up on the. I wonder if the team gave them an extra day to gather themselves and then come back to. You know what I mean? Come back to work. Yeah, I don't think you can really pick against them. It's as you said, Milwaukee just seems to be coming into these games at the worst time, times when they need to have the win. I mean, I think Milwaukee seems to be a little bit. They're not as bad. I don't think that to me. I don't think their record is as bad as it shows.
And I'm wondering though with all. I mean, they had it wasn't just Victor Williams and Adam Tadish that went down last week. There were a lot. Of that, I mean, they had a fullback playing center at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
They had wide receivers playing all the linebacker spots and DB spot. It was a nightmare at the end of that game. I think they only had 16 or 17 bodies left at the end of that game. It's not a good spot for Milwaukee at all.
Going back to the history of these two teams, I don't think it really matters considering the game itself. Overall record was 4-3. This was back in the original Mustang days. This is when they, you know, they were drawing 10,000 in Milwaukee for these for their games, but yeah.
Now that's a homestand.
Yeah.
Not a home game.
We also have, where did my schedule go? Cool. Here's another one. Another game where DeVia will probably be pulled early. Pittsburgh at Arizona. Good lord.
You know, just like, remember what I said about Milwaukee? It feels like Milwaukee's running into every bad situation.
Yeah.
It's like Arizona's getting everybody at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do we need to talk about this? I mean, really?
No, I guess the only thing that we can say, which may be...
It's going to be another game where you may have a 20-point spread.
Which may be the difference here. The last time that these two teams was back in 2011, Arizona won by 34 points at Pittsburgh. 34 points.
I'll take my chances. I take the 34.
last game of the week. Should be a pretty good game. I think Spokane travels to Chicago.
Yeah, definitely a big game. Both teams 6-4. One team will be in the playoffs at the end of the game, mm-hmm. and one team will not be in the playoffs.
Yep.
At the end of the game. You know, Chicago's lost a couple games in a row. Spokane's won 3 in a row. I've been insistent these last several weeks. Something's wrong with Chicago. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but there's something wrong with that team. Spokane's playing very, very well since Kyle Rowley has found himself a job again,
mm-hmm.
and I don't see any reason for that to change this week. I like Spokane in this game.
Magic number should be 63, and I'll mention why. The Shock lead the overall series 2-0. Spokane has scored 63 points in both of those wins. So...
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It's for the collapse last week for Chicago. For all we know now, maybe it was meant to be.
Well, I don't know if we can call that a collapse. I mean, it's not like the worst thing that they did is they couldn't push forward 3 times at the end of the game, and they're certainly not the first team in AFL history.
No, and we've reamed coaches even harder than this for something.
And
like
in
that.
The end, they did score a touchdown on that drive to go up 8. When you're up 1, it's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really, really hard down and close to try to kill the clock at that point.
I think for Spokane, they do need this win, especially because look at the East, look at the West. Look how many teams right now, and look where everybody's positioned.
Utah's got a de facto bye week, right.
Exactly. So.
Yeah, I mean, the West is very liable to be, let's see, 6-12, 15. The West is liable to be 17 games over 500.
Mm-hmm.
After this week,
Utah needs to get back. Utah needs to get back on the plus side. Really has to be.
I mean, you're starting to wonder how many losses is gonna. You know, is 7 too many?
I swear, it seems just like last year, though, Adam. Almost like last year, where you know all the teams are doing fantastic. We get into the middle of the season, and then all of a sudden teams start doing crappy. You know what I mean? Is how ever since they brought forward this 18-game schedule, it's been like, oh, nobody's out of it.
Orlando is out of
well,
it.
Well, no, Pittsburgh but no. I'm just saying, with all the teams right now, besides those, it's a lot of these games could be considered a crapshoot.
Well, I would say anybody could beat anybody at this point.
So it's with this game too, I probably would pick Spokane to win this one. They need to get on a win to stay with at least a half a game. Within the division, within a game, and obviously Utah is on their heels half a game back. San Antonio has the bye week. I need to change my quarterbacks in my fantasy draft. anything else?
Got Devils in 7?
Devils, they went to overtime.
Yeah, they're currently, yeah. We can honestly say we don't know which way game one is going yet.
Yes, we cannot
say. But I've got Devils in 7.
A lot of people are thinking that LA is just going to run on through. I don't know.
They're not going to run on through.
No. Should be good.
Now, game. I could see them winning the series, but they are not going to win the series in 4 or 5 games.
Should be a good series either way. I think there's like the last couple teams that have won the Stanley Cup have won in white. So that means they're on the road. Who knows?
Don't.
Weird stats. We've seen worse.
I guarantee you this much. There's going to be a lot less rioting after this Stanley Cup. So.
Yeah. Let's go riding. No. there are ways to get in contact with us. You guys know that. There's the Twitter account. There is the Facebook account. They're both at ArenaFan. Adam's email, adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. My email at tim.kepper@arenafan.com. There's the message boards. If you want to be a part of Open Mic, which we did not have a question this week, email us at least by Tuesday morning, please. Also, if there's anything significant that comes out over the weekend, as Adam mentioned earlier, we're going to try to get that out to you as quickly as possible, whether it be through the front page or through social media.
But if it happens on Saturday, I won't be there.
Nope. But either way.
Adam's last night of bachelorhood.
That's right.
It's going to be on Saturday, so I will unfortunately not be dealing with the with the Arena Football League. We'll be tending to more important matters.
That's right. Drunken debauchery and
drunken debauchery for everybody except for me.
Yeah, and something to do with anyways. No. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight family, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.